Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He is Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, I want to start today's show with the Packers running back situation. And we don't know yet exactly how this is going to take shape for Sunday's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Lambeau Field. But rookie Aaron Jones, back at practice on Wednesday, having missed actually only two games from his knee sprain that he sustained in Chicago at Soldier Field. And we've seen Jamal Williams really be the workhorse here for the Packers for really the last two and a half games since Jones and Ty Montgomery both had to exit in Chicago with injuries. But if Aaron Jones comes back here and is able to play on Sunday against Tampa Bay, it creates an interesting situation because we've talked a lot. Mike McCarthy always prefers to have a 1-2 punch at running back. But the Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams 1-2 punch, in whatever order you want to put them in, is not something we've actually seen yet in action for the Packers in this offense. What do you think?
Yeah, coincidentally, Mike, we haven't really seen a 1-2 punch at all this season because yeah. when all the guys were healthy at the beginning of the year, they rode Ty Montgomery 85% of the time, and then Montgomery has the rib injury. Williams injures his knee. Jones becomes the guy, and then he plays for a couple weeks. He injures his knee. Montgomery comes back in, injures his ribs again, and now it's kind of been Jamal Williams. So whatever the combination, whether it's Jones and Montgomery, Williams and Jones, Williams and Montgomery, they haven't really been able to get that 1-2 punch that they like. They've kind of had to go with one guy. So, if they're able to get Aaron Jones back this week, Ty Montgomery was not practicing on Wednesday due to the rib injury, that would be a huge boost because I think those guys complement each other really well. There's sort of a thunder and lightning a little bit there, even though I don't think Williams is your traditional kind of power back in terms of his size.
Right.
But he's very well-rounded. He's good in pass protection. He's shown that he can catch the ball in the backfield. And then Aaron Jones is just so darn explosive. So he's dealt with an MCL sprain in the past. He said it happened at UTEP. He missed, 3 weeks, as we talked about. So if he's able to get back and that knee is right, I think when you're looking at Brett Hundley and the way that they could get this offense moving during the final stretch of the season, having two really dynamic running backs in that backfield could go a long way for helping him in driving this offense forward.
Yeah, and I know that there's a balance to be struck in some ways with running backs because a running back likes to get into a rhythm, likes to get fed the ball, get some carries, and really get a feel for the game. But at the same time, I always think it's a good thing. If you have running backs that have different styles, and I would say Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, as you just described, they do have different styles. I think it's to the offense's advantage to make that defense adjust to those different styles, to be able to use both guys, use them interchangeably in some ways, and really try to keep the defense on its toes. Now, that being said, I mean, if you start feeding Jamal Williams the ball per se and he's, ripping off 5 and 6 and 7 yard runs over and over again, hey, if you've got a hot hand, you've definitely got to ride him. But I think there definitely is an advantage to being able to throw those changeups at a defense in terms of the style of your running game.
You go back, Mike, you look at the Packers, how they've kind of structured their offense and how they've handled those running backs in the past. A lot of times they do go with that hot hand. I think probably the best example of that might have been the 2011 season when Ryan Grant and James Starks almost had like identical stats at the end of the season. I think they both ended up with like 134 carries. But when the situation calls for it, they ran Eddie Lacy every single play in 2013 and 14 for the most part. He was the featured guy with James Starks spelling him. Then you saw kind of the adjustments they made with him and Starks the last couple of years. The Packers they'll evolve and adjust to whatever's available to them in the backfield and in terms of who has the most momentum. But the other thing is, too, is you just want to be able to have those options. You want to be able to throw in a different guy on a particular series, have him run out there for 7, 8, 9 plays, and being able to really keep a defense not guessing and what they're going to be throwing at you. And I think that's one of the things they've lacked this year because of the injury situation. Defenses have known which running back is going to be hitting them, and they've still had success. But if you could have a little bit more unpredictability with that and being able to get back an Aaron Jones or a Ty Montgomery, well, then that's when defensive fronts really aren't going to be sure what they're going to be seeing on a given play.
Yeah, and the one thing we did see from Jamal Williams in the Pittsburgh game that we had not seen in his work previously was we finally saw the big explosive play.
Yes.
Now, it didn't come on the ground. It was on a screen pass. But he got in the open field. He turned on the Jets, and I actually asked him amidst the group of reporters at his locker after practice on Wednesday. He was talking about the screen pass a lot, and I asked him, hey, did you think you surprised people with your speed a little bit there? And he says, yeah, I think I did. I don't know if people thought I was going to get in the end zone. He says, I wasn't even sure I was going to get in the end zone. I was looking at the Jumbotron, you know, making sure that nobody in pursuit was going to be able to chop me down at the one-yard line. So I always think it's kind of funny when you think about those guys on the field and they actually look up at the scoreboard to see what's going on behind them. But that was a big play for Jamal Williams. It did show that in space he can make some things happen, and that was something we hadn't had the opportunity to see.
Yeah, and it isn't the type of like Davante Adams just remarkable, you know, stop and go, you know, double route that he ran to get that touchdown. But it's those type of plays I think are so important to an offense like this. And I said this earlier in the week, Jamal Williams was looking for that big breakthrough play. Now he has it. It's proven that he can do it.
Yep.
And needs to do it again. Also for the screen game, which had really a difficult time establishing itself these last, you know, 3-4 weeks.
Yeah.
For that to get one of those plays, for those linemen to get downfield, Corey Linsley to be able to set that block to set him free. Those are the domino type plays that I think can really establish momentum for an offense going forward. And for Jamal Williams finally to get that big play, awesome. And just to include one more thing, Mike, Tom Fanning from Packers PR found this remarkable stat on Williams: 65 yards in a rushing touchdown, 65 or more receiving yards in a receiving touchdown. Only the first Packers rookie to do that since 1967, Travis Williams. Pretty remarkable what Jamal Williams was able to accomplish.
Travis Williams, another Williams in the
bunch. Unbelievable.
So,
the Roadrunner.
There we go. But with that, we got to go to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodko. It's in that one. And Wes, some injury news as well on the Packers defensive side of the ball with regards to Wednesday's practice. We saw Clay Matthews back on the practice field at outside linebacker. And then also in the middle of the defensive line, Kenny Clark returned. He's been dealing with that kind of nasty ankle sprain from the Baltimore game, but only missed the Pittsburgh game, and looks like he has a chance to get back in action right away here. That's a really good sign for this Green Bay defense.
Yeah, and if you go back and look at that play, Mike, you and I were both there. I think it was in 2014, might have been 2015. Josh Boyd ends up breaking his ankle. They have to bring out the cart.
Yeah.
Did not look good. I had some really bad recall to that moment when I saw Kenny Clark going off the field. Almost the same part of the field, almost the same situation. So to find out that it ends up just being a high ankle sprain, and at that, as he even said, it's a lower high ankle sprain. It isn't really affecting his calf or his shin. It's just sort of in the ankle. I mean, that is a blessing for him, and to be able to even be back on the practice field. He's optimistic for Sunday. Certainly it's going to depend on how the ankle responds to practice, the conversations with the coaches and the medical staff. But the fact that you and I are even talking about Kenny Clark potentially playing in this game against the Buccaneers, quite remarkable, because as he said, even in the moment, he thought his season was over.
Yeah, I mean, and I have to admit, when I was sitting in the press box watching him get carted off, I was like, boy, there goes a guy who, you know, arguably would be in the discussion for defensive MVP for the Packers for 2017. I didn't think we'd see him back on the field again, and here he might be back for this first game in December. You were part of a group of reporters talking to him at his locker after practice on Wednesday, and it sounded like the old home cooking, the mom Thanksgiving meal thing did him some good during the recovery time.
Yeah, and cream of wheat, too, was a big thing, I guess, in the Kenny Clark household. But the thing that's interesting about this, so his mom and his family was out here for this game. Growing up, he was a big Baltimore Ravens fan. His father, Kenny Sr., a massive Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Haloti Ngata, just fan of how they played defense there in the mid-2000s. So they come out for this game, and it just so happens it's also Thanksgiving, a perfect opportunity for them to be at the game. Well, in kind of a bittersweet sort of way, he ends up having this pretty scary incident on the field. He's never missed a game in his football career, dating back to high school, never been forced to leave the field like that. So his mom's freaking out in the stands, having to watch her baby boy, you know, carted off the field. Well, once they find out he's okay, he texts her, she calms down. It ends up being kind of a blessing in disguise that she's there in town. She's taking care of him all week. He has that, you know, kind of, as he said, the Thanksgiving meal, all that fun stuff at home for him. And then by the end of the week, he was running and jogging again. So there's nothing quite like a mother's love. And to have his mom, Leslie, out here during that week, she was going to stay for Thanksgiving but leave a little earlier. Instead, she stayed all the way till Monday morning. Was something that I think was really meaningful for him as well.
Yeah, really unfortunate for the Packers in the sense that the one game that Kenny Clark misses, as well as the Packers have been playing the run with him in there, the one they have to miss is when you have to go up against Le'Veon Bell, the leading rusher in the league. That was unfortunate. But the fortunate part of it is it looks like that might be the only game he has to miss. And while the Packers still have some hope here for these final five games to stay in the hunt, Kenny Clark will be a big addition to get back into that mix.
Yeah, it was funny because you and I were talking about a couple weeks ago, you never want to lose Morgan Burnett, but it just so happened with the defense or the offenses they were playing, that was actually a time where they didn't really need to run the nitro nickel as much. Well, then you look at that game against Pittsburgh, that is a contest. If you were marking down all 16, maybe outside of the Zeke Elliott game,
right,
you want to have Kenny Clark available. So what they did, they almost sort of adjusted their base front. They ran more of that 4-3 quad, even though they don't call it that anymore, front against them, where they didn't really have a true nose tackle. They had, you know, Quentin Dial and Mike Daniels playing more out of a 3 technique. If you have Kenny Clark in there as a 1 right over the center, I think that game, is in terms of the ground game, is a little bit different. But the fact that we are even, again, talking about this and him potentially being in the cards against the Buccaneers and going forward, a really big bright spot for them.
Yeah, and I give Clark a lot of credit, not only for the quick recovery that he seems to be on pace for here, but also he had talked about getting a text message from Ryan Jensen, the center for the Baltimore Ravens, saying, hey, I wasn't trying to do anything dirty, wasn't intending to hurt you. And and Kenny Clark's a big man, but very big of him and very noble of him to essentially say, hey, yeah, all's good. Because I'll tell you, Wes, I looked at the film of that, and I'm not calling Ryan Jensen a liar. I'm not saying he was trying to hurt Kenny Clark, but that was an extracurricular kind of thing under the pile. Kenny Clark was trapped. The play was over, and he took a shove, you know, bending himself backwards with his legs trapped underneath the ball carrier at the end of the play. So one of those things. Maybe Jensen wasn't trying to hurt him, but he was trying to take a shot. He was still trying to do something that was definitely extracurricular and unnecessary. And Kenny Clark says, hey, it's football, it's all good. I give him a lot of credit because I don't know if I'd feel the same way.
Yeah, he said he thanked him for the prayers, you know, wished him the best of luck this season. They've just kind of went about their way. The one thing Clark did say, though, he was mentally prepared for that. So however, he was in a bad spot, in an unfortunate situation, no question about that. But he knew, based on the film, this is the way Jensen plays. That was not a shock to him. So if there's anything, I mean, there is something, I think, to be said for the preparation side of it, that he knew he needed to be prepared for that. And then also the other thing he mentioned, in addition to just putting that behind him, was very grateful for the way Devon House, HaHa Clinton Dix, Mike Daniels, a lot of guys stepped up in that moment. As he said, he's like, you never want to get injured, but it does remind you why you're playing for your team and for your teammates. And he said those are the kind of things that makes him not only want to get back out on the field against Tampa Bay, but play hard for those guys around him.
Yeah, his teammates definitely had his back all the way, as he would for them as well. But with that, we've got to go to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, a veteran Packers player deserves a little bit of discussion here, who's definitely flown rather under the radar for much of the season, but we saw a glimpse of what he can do and what he's done in his four seasons in Green Bay on that first play of the game-tying touchdown drive late in the fourth quarter in Pittsburgh. I'm talking about tight end Richard Rodgers. Caught that quick slant over the middle, 25 yards, really jump-started that final drive. And one of those things that you see the play and it's great and, you know, you're all wrapped up in the game and, okay, here, yeah, the Packers are going. You forget sometimes maybe just how difficult a play that is for a guy who's not getting a ton of snaps.
Yeah.
He hasn't had a whole lot of work this year. And then all of a sudden it's the fourth quarter and a handful of minutes to go in the game and you need your team needs a touchdown. And that quarterback goes to you right away on the first snap. And he came through, and that's to his credit.
Yeah, and a really good read by Brett Hundley on that play, because basically what he had there, he had Randall Cobb from the slot going out about 4 yards and stopping. And then he also had Richard Rodgers kind of running straight down that seam. So he's looking at the play, and I believe it was Ryan Shazier who was playing middle backer on that. He gets late to get over to recover to Rodgers. He throws a dart in there to him 7 yards downfield, and he's off to the races, makes two guys miss, and gets a 25-yard play to get them right at midfield. Huge play from that perspective.
Yeah.
But when you look at everything that was behind that play, Mike, Richard Rodgers is a guy that he played 799 offensive snaps in 2015. Played, I think it was, you know, somewhere basically controlled all the tight end snaps for them that season. Well, last year they bring in Jared Cook. He has to take kind of a step back in the offense. This year they bring in Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks. He plays somewhere around 60 offensive snaps before the week 8 bye. Bennett leaves. He's put back into a situation where he's, you know, a centerpiece again in this offense, averaging like 33, 34 snaps a game. Not once did you ever hear Richard Rodgers complain about playing time. Not yep. once did he ever complain publicly. I don't know, obviously, they have conversations themselves, but he never made it a big ordeal in the media. And has been a guy that he said he doesn't really look at his job any differently as opposed to when he was playing every snap or when he took a little bit of a reduced role this year. His job responsibility is the same, and his mentality is the same. In talking to Davante Adams and Jordy Nelson, some guys in the locker room, that's something that his teammates really respect about him, of how his approach has been, you know, through this whole 3.5 seasons to this point.
Yeah, I give Rodgers a lot of credit in that respect, because not only was, as you mentioned, all the snaps he played in 2015, but with quarterback Aaron Rodgers, he, in that season, had become very much a red zone target. He piled up, you know, wasn't just the Hail Mary catch at the end of Detroit. Right. He had scored a fair amount of touchdowns that season. Then you saw Jared Cook come in, and there were some injuries with Jared Cook along the way, but Cook became obviously the primary tight end down the stretch last year, and then the two offseason moves with Bennett and Kendricks this year. And yeah, Richard Rodgers hasn't said a peep about it. He's been a pro, he's been a professional, and now that he's being called upon to take more snaps than earlier in the season, he's again just taking the professional approach. Hey, I'm going to do what I'm asked to do. I'm doing a lot of the same things I did before. I'm just now taking more snaps again. And I'll be curious to see, because we haven't seen Brett Hundley go to the tight ends a whole lot since he became the starting quarterback. And I'm wondering, you know, if maybe a play like that, the first play of that that game-tying drive in Pittsburgh, if something like that maybe leads to a little bit more, whether it's Rodgers or Kendricks, but maybe leads to a little bit more tight end involvement.
Yeah, totally. And the thing that, you know, Davante Adams said too, he trains with Richard in the offseason, that they're two very close friends. He said that the leadership value that he kind of has, he's so quiet and unassuming, some people don't realize the impact he has on other guys in the locker room. So even if it isn't, you know, a 5-catch, 75-yard day with a touchdown, he still does a lot of things to help out Kendricks, to help out, you know, what the communication up front on those packages. And he's so darn durable, too. I mean, he's played in 66 consecutive games for the Packers this point of his career. I think we sometimes forget, too, the beginning of the season, he actually had that broken tip of his finger or whatever that was, where he was playing with kind of a splint on it.
Right.
He still is out there every single game, still contributing like he does. And it's something, again, that I think when you look at this offense and kind of your tools and your weapons, he's a guy that sometimes doesn't always raise into that top, you know, conversation, but has still been there because, you know, he's so available.
Yeah, and I'm very curious to see how much more perhaps he gets involved here in this final month of the season. But we got to get to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, final segment, I think it's worth touching on some comments we heard from quarterback Brett Hundley. He had his regular media session on Wednesday after practice. And he's the one who threw the phrase out there, and it's one that a lot of people are talking about, that that the Packers need to get off of the term, so to speak, and that's roller coaster.
Yeah.
He knows this team has very much gone, you know, the way of his play, and it's been up and down, and he's really looking to try to establish a level of consistency here, and that's what the Packers are going to need to try to win these next two ball games before possibly Aaron Rodgers comes back.
Yeah, and Hundley said it. I mean, it really does come down to the consistency aspect of it. He's shown against the Bears, he showed again against the Steelers, exactly what he can bring to the party here, to use a Larry McCarron phrase, in you know, the long, the big explosive plays. The thing for him, it's not even just about week to week. It's play to play. It's series to series.
Yeah.
Being able to continually moving the ball. And even if you have a big explosive play at the end of one series, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be able to have anything more than a three and out the next series. There's a lot of different factors that play into that. But being able to threaten every single time and to take advantage of turnovers and takeaways, so critical at that quarterback position. I thought Dirk Cutter, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach, also had some really interesting thoughts on this because he's been with Jameis Winston now for the last couple of years and developing a young quarterback and the challenges with that. And he said it. I mean, when they plan for Brett Hundley, they plan for the best Brett Hundley because he's put it on tape now. He's shown against one of the top defenses in the league he can perform. And for the Buccaneers, they have to be on top of their own stuff because if you know, it's been up and down, but you have to prepare for the up.
Yeah, and I want to write about this a little bit more probably later in the week in perhaps my One Last Look column, but I mentioned it in our Insider Inbox earlier this week. I think these last 3 weeks in particular have been an incredible education and in self-growth and everything for Hundley because you look at he had the victory against Chicago, the great fourth quarter, wasn't able to build on it, didn't really, you know, take off from there the way everybody had hoped. Then he had a clunker. He had to rebound from a clunker. He did that against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now he has to rebound from a heartbreaker, really, really tough loss because the Packers hadn't had a loss like this with him as the quarterback. So all of these things playing into it, and now we see what he's got going forward.
And let's be honest, too, Mike, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the 32nd ranked defense in the NFL right now. He played really well against the Steelers. Now you need to play well against the defense that you're supposed to play well against.
Absolutely, yeah. And with that, we will call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.